Okay, before I talk about the variability of ozone, just a short introduction about the system we're using. The model is GS4. We have ozone assimilation system that works with GS4 that has been validated. We have a paper submitted now to the special issue, the ORA issue of JGR. The model has some parameterized chemistry for ozone in the troposphere as well as in the stratosphere. We assimilate MLS profiles from 216 hectopascals up and only total column ozone. The resolution is 1 by 1.25 on 55 levels and analysis step every 3 hours, and so is the output. This is just one slide to show that this system produces something that's on this planet, a bit of validation. This is something from, this is a plot from the paper I mentioned, actually. This is kind of plot showing integrated ozone between 200 hectopascals and 1. From SAGE and co-located analysis. The RMS difference is within 5%, so that seems reasonably good. So now to the main topic. I'll be working with two systems here. One is assimilation, OMI and MLS. The other one is all data withheld. So just sort of like an online CTM type of thing. Those plots show 200 millibar ozone after a year-long assimilation or simulation. On the left, you have the simulated ozone with no data. On the right, you have assimilation. And the point of it is, I didn't spend like 3 hours looking for the right plots here. This is the first one I picked. And the point I want to make is that the structure of those things looks exactly the same. They're the same features in the same places. If you had a contour map here, they would probably look pretty much the same, only the numbers would be different. So what does it mean? The rest of the talk is pretty much me trying to analyze this plot. I'll try to not answer, God forbid, but address two questions here. The first one is, what is it exactly that assimilation does to the model, to your background field? Because there's been a lot of talking about assimilation introducing some spurious features into the field or smoothing out some things. All those things are certainly true for a dynamical data assimilation, as we know. But this is just constituent. Both experiments are driven by the same assimilated winds. The difference is in ozone data. The second question is, how does assimilation compare with some independent data? We will have some high-resolution aircraft data to see what is and what is not represented in the assimilation. This is just one plot. This is one flight, mosaic campaign aircraft. The dashed line is analysis, and the solid line is the aircraft data. So the point here is that there's a lot of variability along the flight track, and in fact there are things that you could call discontinuities, if you will. There are jumps. So how well are they represented in assimilation? That would be the second topic. As far as mosaic, I'm glad you're smiling. As far as mosaic data, this is a campaign, mostly, I think it's European, instruments fly on commercial aircraft measuring ozone and other things, pretty high frequency. So what I want to do here is compare that with analysis, and I want it to be a fair comparison. So, of course, you won't resolve something that those measurements are taken every 10 seconds. So degrade the resolution of mosaic data for any comparison to that of the analysis by averaging within grid boxes. And then all comparisons that will be done are done between the average mosaic data and simulated and interpolated analysis algorithm. This is about where we are here. The plot shows the upper troposphere, lower stratosphere region. This is sort of partial zonal mean over the Atlantic between 20 north and 90 north. This is pretty much where all the flights go on. In colors, you have potential temperature. So those things are isentropes. And the black line is potential vorticity line for PVU, which roughly marks the travel pulse. So the isentropes cross the travel pulse. This is a distribution of how many mosaic observations in July 2005 I have for particular isentropic levels here. And the upper one, starting 350K and higher, will just happen to cross the travel pulse. So the ozone on those will have two modes. There will be the tropospheric air and the stratospheric air. As on this plot, this is the distribution of ozone. All right, looking at the upper plate here, in black there is ozone from those average mosaic data. It has two maxima. This is tropospheric air. In fact, you can use a dynamical definition of the travel pulse setting ozone to 0.1 ppmv, so that would be the travel pulse. And in red, you have assimilated ozone distribution collocated also with those two modes. This is the same thing, but with mosaic and model in blue. So the difference here is that, well, the troposphere is similar. The higher mode is a little too low. There is a bias. So if you look at, now compare the model and the assimilation here, the distance between those two modes is different. Increases in the assimilation, which is a good thing. But that tells us about the relative position or absolute position of those two modes of ozone distribution, but it doesn't tell us anything about structure. One possible way of quantifying structure of the field is through power spectra. It may or may not be the best way to do it, but that's what I did. I calculated power spectra. I do everything along, just one-dimensional power spectra along the flights, and then their average, just to have mosaic as a benchmark. The black line shows the power spectrum from mosaic, only shows chopped off all the flights to the same length as for about 4,000 kilometers. So you have mosaic power spectrum, then in red you have assimilation and model. Now, what this shows here is that the assimilation basically increases the power at all frequencies. This is consistent with the picture from the previous slide. What happens here again? When you have those wiggles, waves between high ozone and low ozone, as the first plot showed, they're probably at the same place, everything is the same, but the values here and here are different. They are different in such a way that the distance between high mode and low mode in assimilation is higher. So the amplitudes will be higher. It's consistent with that. One would say, okay, but this shows that the analysis increases variability at all wavelengths. Is that something typical? Maybe it always increases variability. Not always. This is July. In March, I see the opposite happens. the analysis power is lower at all frequencies. Again, I don't have a corresponding Ullman distribution plot to this, but I made one. And it's the same thing. Here the two modes are closer in the analysis, closer together than in the assimilation, than in the model, in the CTM. And that's consistent with this. In both cases, they're lower than the mosaic, which will be addressed later. Also, in both cases, and for all the months that I did that for, the slopes of assimilation and model power spectra are essentially the same. Those are parallel lines. So it's not like someone would say there's analysis increment somewhere here and there. That's kind of a small thing. So maybe it introduces some variability at certain scales. That doesn't seem to happen. In fact, when you look at those increments, I can't give you the actual numbers, but they're very small. Those are very small increments. They wouldn't show up in something like this. This is a longer process. When you think about advection, how advection works is, say, you start with some simple initial condition with only low wave numbers. And you have like two basins, low and high. And then the advection starts mixing things together, forms filaments, cascades variability into lower and lower wavelengths. But the values, the initial values, kind of remain the same. They just all get triangled together. And that's how assimilation also seems to work on top of the model. It changes the relative position of those two modes that were shown in those PDFs, and then the advection does the rest. So there is no scale, there is no characteristic scales in which assimilation will have bigger or smaller impact. No, I'm not. Well, they have certain length scale, which here I think is about 250 kilometers, which it's small. We decreased that. We started with 400 or even 500 a few years ago, but now we have those MLS data. We have OMI. This is a very dense set of observations, and we don't need that to be this. I don't think the error covariance matters that much here, because still, whether it's big or small, it's at a certain scale. So if it introduced something new, or if it smoothed something that should be there, it will do so at a certain scale as well. That's, you know, kind of. Exactly. Yes, I'm not trying to claim that this is a universal thing, but this is kind of what we may be approaching. I kind of liked your comment yesterday to someone's talk that we're basically having an ideal model we wouldn't need to assimilate ozone or any other tracer, because the structure is already defined. And so it is here, but the only thing is that we may have some biases, kind of what's the highest ozone, what's the lowest ozone, and that's what assimilation, that's the only thing that assimilation seems to be affecting here. Okay, so this is a little summary of this first topic, how assimilation and model relate to each other. It's on the first plot. We see the same structure. The structure of the field seems to be, this is about horizontal scales. I didn't even look at the vertical structure. Part of it is also dynamic, certainly, but I'm not talking about this. The horizontal structure seems to be defined by and determined by the dynamics. I haven't seen any case where some new features were introduced or removed. And so now, that said, How does the assimilation compare with the actual, well, or with independent data? So this is just an example. Here, the upper plot shows mosaic in black, just one flight. Not the raw mosaic. This is already averaged into the analysis resolution. And in red, you have analysis collocated, interpolated, and so on. So the overall thing seems similar. This is just one flight that I picked out of many. But the small scale variability is different here. And I couldn't emphasize it enough. In theory, this kind of variability would be attainable for the analysis because the resolution is the same. There is enough degrees of freedom. It just doesn't do it for some reason. So if I want to ask, so can I trust the analysis to represent the small scale variability? All the way down to 1.1 times 1 1/4 degree, no. This shows I can't. So what scales can I trust? What scales can be resolved? I don't know what the best way to do it, but one way is to try keep on degrading the aircraft data resolution. Here I'm doing this by convoluting each flight with some compactly supported function, kind of goes to along the interval over which it's not zero, has a prescribed length. I can change it. I can make it small. I can make it larger. And I try to see where I get something that's similar to the flight, to the analysis. So this is one example where I smooth the mosaic. I don't do anything to the analysis. I smooth the mosaic data over 480 kilometers. And this is something that, at least to the eye, looks, now they kind of look like have similar variability. This is a power spectra again. It's all the same month, July. This is with no smoothing. So as we saw before, this, in fact, the same plot. The analysis lacks the small-scale resolution variability. This is mosaic a little lower with smoothing over 160. This is with mosaic smoothing over 320 kilometers. Those two lines seem to start overlapping. When I go too far, well, I don't know if this is too far or not. I won't have really any quantitative results here, but if I go any further than this, then mosaic just has not enough at low or high wave numbers. But that's one way of looking at small-scale variability. Another way is to look at either gradients or two-point differentials in the ozone field. A lot of people are doing this. So I do this kind of thing along the flight track again, just taking one point along the track and another one and the next one, subtracting them and looking at the distribution of those things. Again, black is mosaic, red is assimilation. They both have this kind of double exponential, stressed exponential shape, which is exactly what it's supposed to look like. The difference is that the mosaic has a larger variance. The peak is lower, the tails are a little fatter, which is consistent with it having larger variability of small scales. It has more of those. The differences will be larger. So now, what does smoothing do to this? Again, I do the same thing. I apply smoothing. I could have a whole, sequence of those pictures. I just have one. Smoothing over 480 kilometers. Well, brings those two curves a little closer together. Now, it's just not perfect. If I go a step further and do it over, 600 kilometers, I tried. They resemble each other even more, but then unacceptable things happen to the power spectra. So this is just, it is very preliminary work, but I want to have two different ways of measuring the variability, and they don't quite seem to give the same result through this method, but finding a compromise between those two, and the compromise seems to be at 480, which is, well, this is actually roughly 480, because the flights go in the higher north or closer to the tropics, it's a little different, but this is roughly 6 grid cells. And this is the all the summary of this part of the talk. So, what I basically said everything here, but now this smoothing. Well, this suggests that we can maybe a little better, more trust the analysis at those scales over like 6 grid grid boxes. That this would be the number where that would be that's what's resolved. I'm almost done, actually. Is 6 a lot or not? Funny thing, when you ask people about those things, they will tell you that there is a rule of thumb that 6 is actually the number. I heard 6, I don't know. But if you look in the literature, there's like, I couldn't find anything. This is a plot from a paper by Lin and Rood. In 96, this is the same dynamical core that we are using. They just show a little one-dimensional model here, how it resolves a rectangular wave. Basically, how this is on the simplified one-dimensional model, how a jump is resolved, and how many grid cells does it take to resolve a jump, and the dashed line is the analytical solution to this, and from the experiment they get this. And if you see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a very simple experiment, so it does take a few grid cells to resolve a discontinuity like that. It's not unseen. That's the only thing that we found. The question will be, of course, why does analysis not have sufficient variability? We just listed a few possible reasons. Some of those things will certainly be model dependent. One thing that happens here is we have, in GS4, we have to use averaged winds. As we know, all kinds of bad things happen if we use instantaneous winds. There's too much gravity wave. There's too fast overturning. So those are better, but perhaps they remove something they shouldn't. There's also one, this is kind of in gray because I don't think that's it. Maybe there's something wrong with the aircraft data. Maybe something else. This, I'm not going to answer any of this because I simply don't know. And I don't know, did I summarize it enough already? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Well,
thank you. I'm not sure if you're going to read the summary or not. But, actually, Keith Bama got a lot of stuff how about the vertical resolution, though? Because
I haven't looked yet.
Because in the presence of shear, right, vertical diffusion is in the practice horizontal. There's no point of